Hello and welcome to the Talking Heads podcast. In this show, we take great snips from other shows, shine a bit of light, add a bit of context, and always add some humor. We are not affiliated with any of the shows mentioned in the podcast. However, if you are interested in the shows discussed, you can easily find them by going to the link in the podcast. And now, to the show.
And the real world is not an idea. It is not words. Reality is...
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Talking Heads. We are reviewing Jordan Peterson's discussion with Dennis McKenna. That's Jordan Peterson 299. Joined, as always, with my fellow sidekick, Sean. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Happy to be here.
Nice.
I loved this podcast, by the way. One of my favorites I've found in like the past couple of months, actually. I don't know if it was just like the things that were like on my mind connected with a lot of the ideas discussed in the podcast, but I don't know. Something about this one really resonated with me, I feel.
Well, it's two really smart guys.
Yeah.
And you know, one of them is going to come at it. I mean, they're both academics in their own right.
But they're both scientists, pure at heart.
100%. So there's that commonality. But you know, there's this part of Dennis that's obviously out there.
Yeah.
And he loves it. I mean, he's Terrence McKenna's brother, and that guy couldn't have been more out there. Basically, like a cult leader, in a sense. Leader and lecturer. And it's the right time to do it. I think 10, 15 years ago, people weren't really talking about psilocybin in a scientific, academic way when it came to the benefits of it for therapy. And now it's pretty well accepted, and it's grown a lot and has a lot of steam. So therefore, the clinical side of psychology, which is all Peterson, can come forward and give a bit of a reference to it, which is, it's nice to see those two things kind of, you know, converging.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know, I think the way Jordan talks about psychedelics, I still get the impression that he has yet to have, like, experience with them, like, in his own way, and, like, not a research, but, like, to just taking them. I still feel like he hasn't done that yet, which is totally fine. Like, as an academic, I can understand that. But I feel like there's just a certain level of, like, I don't know. I feel like I was tripping with a couple of my friends recently, and I had told them about all of the things that I thought psilocybin had benefited from me and everything, and they kind of saw, like, the change and everything. But when they did it themselves, they were like, okay, I get it now. And they, like, understood. There's, like, a certain level of, like, breakthrough you have to say. And I don't think that you have to have that. But it certainly, you can go a lot deeper in discussion.
For sure. That was the first time they ever done it?
Yeah, it was. And nice. And I told them about it. And I was, like, I was encouraging them to do it and everything. And I went with them. And I kind of trip-sit for them. And they were like, okay, I get it now. And so it was nice to see that.
How much did you guys do? Do you know? Roughly?
I didn't do any. I was sober for it.
Oh, okay.
They did. I gave them like 2 grams each. Although I went over and talked with them a little bit before just to see how they were doing about it. And they were really excited about it. So I gave them a little bit extra because I feel like they could have handled it.
Excellent.
And it went well. It went really well.
Nice. So they may have done as many as 3?
No, they did like 2.5.
2, okay.
Each.
That's enough.
Yeah, that's a good first one.
That'll get you there.
Yeah.
You can see a lot and experience a lot.
Well, and I feel like for the first time, you also just have to be like comfortable with the feeling of it, because it's just kind of a strange feeling that can be like overwhelming if you haven't felt it before. So you kind of just have to like have the feeling like be a little bit softer the first time and get used to it.
Well, they touched on that, and I thought it was a really interesting way of describing it when Dennis was saying that it kind of reduces the filtering system.
Yeah.
It kind of opens the floodgates, and a lot is coming in. And I wanted to talk to you about that because it made me think, because it hasn't been that long since I did a pretty good dose. And there were certain thoughts that I had during that time that the next day was sat with me, and I'm thinking, are these real observations, or should they just be dismissed? Right? Yeah. It's like something real happened. Like the floodgates are open. You're getting new sensory input, and you're almost gathering more data, because like you and I could be talking, but if we were both shrooming right now, it's almost like in some kinds of like intentions come across. Yeah. There's other things you just wouldn't pick up on, and you think you're picking up on that. You're like, oh, I think he feels this way about me.
Yeah.
On top of just the discussion itself. And it's like, is this real? Is this not? And then the second part of that question is, if it is real, if it is something that you're experiencing, because we're not in that state very often, we're like babies at experiencing it.
Yeah.
So it's okay that we don't make a lot of sense of it.
Yeah. I love the – because they talk about this in the podcast, and I love the way Dennis describes it. He's like just if you experience anything, it's real. You know, like defining what real is kind of up for interpretation, I guess you could say. But he says – more importantly, if they're real or not, is are they useful? Like, are these feelings and experiences and thoughts that you have, are they useful to your everyday life or to you as a person, or helpful to, like, just going to help you improve in life? You know, which I think is a really healthy way of looking at it. Because, like, rather than, you know, spending all day thinking, like, oh, is this real? Was I actually feeling this way? Like, was that important or whatever? It's just, like, focus on... Is it going to be useful?
Sure. Yeah, that's probably a better way of looking at it, because then it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Either way. It doesn't mean that what you saw in that moment is like this real event you should walk forward with. Going back to the hypothetical conversation we could have on it, if I'm thinking, I don't think this guy likes me at all, and I thought we were friends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after the fact, I don't have to just extrapolate that out. I can just continue with all the interactions I have with you and say, oh, it seems fine. We seem like friends. But in that moment, there was something there that I should think about that doesn't define, you know, all of the relationship moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm not sure. Yeah, it's I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either.
Yeah, that's a weird one, though.
But that's the one thing I was thinking. It's like, think of a baby that is just come into this world, and they're all this sensory information is coming in. They have to practice it. They have to know, like, something seems scary at first. But then you're like, oh, this isn't actually scary. Eventually, I learn. You know, like, we all start off scared of the dark, and in time, we're not. It's like we get used to that sensory reaction. The same way with shrooms. It's like, it's okay if it's scary the first time you do it. Or
that's the benefit of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's like, we're not supposed to be used to this feeling.
No, definitely not. Yeah, it's like, I think oftentimes people, when they have these experiences, they get like really self-reflective, and they think about like all of the, like maybe some of the things that they like need to improve on, or that they're like, man, I am fat as fuck and I need to go to the gym, you know?
Right.
And then you like really feel that when you're on shrooms or any psychedelic, you know, you feel this like, or at least I do. I feel this like feeling to like just go inward and explore. And but you have to be comfortable with that like unknown thing. It's like, you know, when you were 13 or whatever and you started riding your bike in the neighborhood, and then you're like, one day I'm gonna leave the neighborhood and go explore and stuff. It's like, it's scary at first, but then you know you get used to it, and then you find some cool spots, or you learn something. Or it's just about being open, though. I think that's the most important thing with these.
I think it would be a good an interesting study to take certain types of people. Like, if you get people that are compulsive liars, and then you have them do shrooms, and then interview them afterwards and say, how did it feel? Because that's obviously a problem. It's like a stage of our lives. We all try lying. Little kids do it. They learn to do it. Did you eat all the chocolate? They've got chocolate all over their face. No.
Yeah.
Clearly, they're not good at lying. They're practiced for a bit. They see the benefits or not. And then eventually in time, hopefully with good guidance and good friends and people calling them out, you realize this isn't going to work. I mostly need to tell the truth. And then you move on. Some people don't go through that stage. They get stuck in it. They find it too beneficial, and then they don't work their way back. And, I mean, there's a lot of problems through development that go like that, right? We all have our own, where we get stuck with something that we're not dealing with, aggression, anger issues, whatever. But it would be interesting to take groups of people that have kind of basically been diagnosed like that, give them that shroom trip, and see if it's does kind of have any reflective similarities with those people. I think that could be fascinating.
That would be a really fascinating experiment. I know they, one of my favorite ones is they did an experiment on inmates in prison, and they found that inmates who had some sort of a psychedelic trip at some point in their lives were, on average, compared to people who didn't, less likely to be in jail for violence. And then people who hadn't had an experience, just literally one experience, made them less likely to be in jail for violent crimes, which I can't remember by how much, but it was like a substantial amount. It was like definitely a noticeable difference, which I love that.
That would make sense.
Yeah. I also, I don't know. I think like there's a lot of benefits to these things, and a lot of people get great benefits from them, but I don't think that that everyone will get the same benefits. Like, I like the metaphor. I can't remember who used it. I think it was Alan Watts, but he said it, he explained it like playing a piano. Like, anyone can sit down on a piano and make, like, sounds and make a song and make it sound like okay. But someone who is really, really trained and they have a lot of experience with them, they can sit down and play a beautiful song, you know? So it's just like, it's just a, like an instrument in some way. And so it's like some people are not going to be able to play the instrument correctly. It's not to say that they won't get some benefit from it, but a lot of other people will
get more.
Get more, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that's possibly like the integration portion of it? You know, when you talk about people that are kind of like deep thinkers,
yeah,
that really what they are is just people that reflect on moments that have happened.
Yeah.
Whereas you can have, you know, you get a room with like ADHD people. They're not massively reflective often.
Sometimes
they can be. I'm not saying it generalized, but like the speed that they move,
yeah,
they're like on to the next. It's like, oh, did that adventure? What's the next thing?
Yeah. But I think what we're really talking about is like openness, which is a big five personality trait.
Mm.
And so that I think is what benefits the most from like these psychedelics things. Like if you and not everyone is open to everything, you know, it's a personality trait. So it means like openness to experience and things. So if you're an open person, you're more likely to try things you've never tried before. And some people are not like that. But I think that that's a big one that can have a big impact on people's outcomes with these experiences. It's just being open. And that's what I encourage people the most is just be open with them. Don't go in with any expectations and allow yourself to be comfortable whatever happens, you know.
I would certainly assume that if you take one of those personality quizzes, which I think Jordan Peterson actually has one on his something authoring program that you can look up.
Yeah, his self-authoring program.
That's it. And they do that, and it kind of gives you a breakdown of like what your openness is and the other traits that it comes with.
Yeah.
And maybe if your openness is low, like that is the kind of thing that you should try to improve it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I don't know if they've done this study, but I really hope they do. And I think it would be a really good one is if you did a personality test for people who have never had any experience with this. And then I feel like they've done this study. I just can't remember off the top of my head. But and then have them do the same personality test after they've had the experience. And I think if they've done the experiment, if I'm remembering correctly, that people who did it afterwards were higher in openness than before.
Huh.
Which makes total sense. I can totally see that being a possibility.
I would imagine that the closer you take the second test to when you did the shrooms, the higher the openness.
Probably, yeah.
Because it does, like they said, it's like resetting the computer. Rogan talks about it, and he has a great example, which Dennis basically gave anyway. But it's like resetting your computer, clearing out the clutter, and, you know, everything kind of works smoother, per se, quotes.
Yeah.
But Rogan does it a different way. And he says it's like restarting your computer, like the control, alt, delete, restart. But now all your files, which is all your bullshit, is just in one folder that says old bullshit.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's literally up to you to go back in and click it open again.
Yeah. And I like that.
I like that one a lot too, because it really does give you the chance to say, okay, I saw a lot of truths and a lot of ways of being. It's going to take tons of work to become that, or I can just stick with what I already have and go back to my same actions.
Yeah. Yeah. And plus, like, after, assuming you have like a, maybe not your first experience, but like after you get like a really good like breakthrough one, you're like, man, I don't think I can go back to seeing the world the same after knowing what I know now, or what I feel like I've realized in my own head now. It's like you completely see the world differently.
It certainly makes you feel more guilty for being an asshole.
Definitely. Definitely.
That is universal.
Which, in today's society, I think is a very good thing. That's another reason I encourage people to smoke weed is like, I mean, it's not for everyone, and, you know, check with your doctor.
Go easy.
But, you know, it's like if it can make people not be such dicks all the time, you know, I think that's a good thing.
For sure. You just got to be careful that if you have many kind of lazy tendencies already, you got to be careful.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't think it makes you lazy. I think that it makes lazy people very lazy.
It makes it easy to be lazy.
Sure. I've always kind of been busy and stayed busy with things. And I've never minded, like, if I have to go to the gym and then, you know, smoke some weed, I still go to the gym. Still got things to do. I go to jiu-jitsu that way. It actually is quite nice.
That's pretty popular
way.
In the jiu-jitsu community.
It really is.
Yeah, so I can imagine.
So it really isn't the drug that makes you lazy, but it pulls out that kind of thing. I think kind of the same for alcohol, too, though. It's like when it's, people get aggressive on it. I mean, they're kind of just aggressive.
Aggressive people, yeah.
And it's going to make it worse. Yeah. It's going to kind of pull
But I feel like alcohol makes people, to some extent, not everyone, and this is a generalization, but in excess, alcohol makes people the worst versions of themselves.
100%.
Yeah.
Cocaine makes people the most annoying versions of themselves.
Really? Okay. I have no experience with that one.
They would just, I lived in LA, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, you go to some of those parties and then you can spot them immediately.
Yeah,
they're like ultimate networkers that are super interested in you but won't let you talk at all.
That's interesting.
It's wild. You're just like, all right, dude.
That doesn't sound very desirable.
And then they're coming up with a new business idea every couple of minutes. I mean, there's just such vast differences with different drugs, even hallucinogenic drugs. I mean, they're so vastly different. I would love to try ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca would be a cool one.
That would be wild.
How much do you know about ayahuasca?
I mean, anecdotally, a lot of stories. I'm fascinated.
Amazing. Have you ever seen Hamilton's Pharmacopoeia?
Yes. Great show.
That's a great one. The one on ayahuasca is incredible. Ayahuasca is insane because it's like a naturally occurring form of DMT. But if you eat just ayahuasca, just the plant from it, you have a enzyme in your gut called MAO that will just deactivate it. It'll break it down. So you have to get an MAO inhibitor, which is this other plant that they found like 2,000 miles away from the native ayahuasca plant, and they somehow found that if you mix these two of these that you get the DMT from the plant.
That's really the story. It was 2,000 miles?
Yeah. They're
How
like
did native people travel 2,000 miles?
I don't know. But they somehow discovered that these two plants, when you mix them, one of them has DMT and the other one is an MAO inhibitor.
I'm less impressed with the idea that how did they figure this out? I mean, they brought this up on the podcast. Dennis was talking about it. And I think Jordan started t- talking about it, like, how amazing is this that he did it?
Yeah.
And Dennis said something important. It was like, hey, they're trying all kinds of things.
Yeah, they were just throwing shit together.
And they, when you have thousands of years to do that,
yeah,
it's like, I'm not saying it was an accident. Like, you put a monkey at a piano for an infinite amount of time and it'd play every song. Sure, but that's just because it's hard to think about how long infinity is.
Yeah.
It's like you give people thousands and thousands of years and they're experimenting with all types of stuff, especially if they, like Dennis was saying, they like brewed a lot, you know,
yeah,
and made not beer, but he called it something else, like chuck something.
Pretty equivalent to beer nowadays, I guess.
Yeah, it just means you're pouring stuff together, mixing stuff up, and then kind of accidentally you find, you know, what worked, and you look around and go, wait, what did I add to this?
Yeah. One of my favorite, not to get off on a tangent here, but one of my favorite Hamilton episodes is the one with the toads. The toads that have DMT in them.
Oh, the 5-MeO DMT.
5-MeO DMT toads.
Now I've done that.
Yeah, that's incredible. But the way that they found the guy who did it first in the show, and the way that he found it was he literally just started, I think he would take his cigarettes and like rub them on the toads or something like that. Or he would somehow, he just started messing with these toads. And he said that the one that has 5-MeO-DMT, he said that it was his favorite because of the flavor of it, actually, the taste of it.
No shit.
Yeah. And then he found out, or somehow it got out that the toads have this gland that when you squeeze it, it sprays out this 5-MeO-DMT.
What?
Yeah, it's
so
insane.
It hasn't been happening for all that long.
No.
Oh, I thought
it
was,
the guy
like
was old.
Ancient.
No, the guy was old. At least the toad one is. I mean, DMT probably is goes back pretty far, but the MAOD DMT toad one is, I mean, the guy's like, I don't know, in his 70s or whatever, and it was really fascinating. That's a really good episode to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I did watch it. I guess I didn't remember the details of it. I remember watching Hamilton's reaction to doing it in the end.
Yeah.
And it was, when I did mine, I went with a group of friends,
mm-hmm,
and we all saw each other's response
doing
it. And they were all very different.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean, extremely different.
I bet.
From lying peacefully to some people trying to like purge, like they look like they were throwing up, but they're not.
Yeah.
Someone running around like they're in a pixie fairy garden.
Wow.
Just saying, I love you, and jumping around. It was wild, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. So different to see it. And I think they've found DMT in things as far back as the Egyptians, but I'm pretty sure it's the other one, the one where you see the entities and the one that they use for the Strassman studies. So that's N-N-dimethyltryptamine, which supposedly is, even though they're both DMT, they're significantly different, like, trips.
Yeah, well, because it's they've gone so far with making serotonin psychedelics, like psychedelics that fit into the serotonin receptor. And you change just like one little thing and it's a completely different molecule and a completely different experience. And there's just people who are in their basement just going around messing with all these different ones. Cause it's like NMDA. You have like, I don't know how many different variations, but so many. Same thing with LSD and all these other like serotonin receptor psychedelics.
Well, it's kind of how they work around the legal system too.
Yeah.
Because I think the FDA has to ban each type of molecule.
Probably.
So they just go and change
like
a little
bit of it.
And then before you know it, it's like, well, this hasn't been like peer reviewed. So even though it creates a similar reaction and the body's like, yeah, I'm having fun, but maybe some of that stuff is like real damaging.
Could be. I'm not sure.
Mm.
I feel like I don't know. Yeah, they're definitely they've gone. There's some people who just, you know, look up on the dark web all these different types of psychedelics and
they love it.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's all the same there. It's escapism, right? It's not like you...
That's what I feel like that is.
I feel like it's best to use these things to learn. And also as a guidance to anyone, like, do it at an appropriate age. Yes. And it's hard to say what that is. But, you know, teenagers possibly don't need to be seeing certain things like this, maybe. They don't need to reflect.
No, I would not recommend it for anyone under the age of, like... probably the best would be under 25, but certainly not under 20.
Yeah. I think I did it the first time when I was maybe 17.
Yeah.
And we did quite a lot of shrooms, and it was an uncomfortable experience for, like, everyone that did it.
Yeah, it's...
It was fun at first. It was very funny.
You have to get to know yourself a little bit more and be comfortable with, like, your own identity and stuff. And, like, a lot of that will get worked out, like, as you continue to have those experiences. But no, you definitely don't want to go in there on a bad day.
What did you think of the idea of the entities and whether they're real or not?
I'm not sure. I've never experienced something like that, or at least what I felt like would have been something like that. So I'm not sure. I think that, I mean, honestly, I agree with what Dennis said the most, was just like, rather than focusing on are they real, are they useful? But I don't know. It was very, very fascinating. And I think that was one that where Jordan really, like, through his, I guess, clinical research or something, kind of understood that one a little bit more, I felt, than some of the other ideas that they discussed. So it was really fascinating to hear his input on that one as well.
Well, he gave that really interesting example that he had a patient once that was really effective at lucid dreaming.
Oh, yeah.
And could speak to the characters in the dream and ask them what they represented and got answers.
That's
insane
to me.
Imagine how useful that would be.
That would be unreal. I could not imagine that.
I asked a dream character once. I said to them, hey, wait, is this a dream? Because I became lucid in it, and I was talking to one of my closest and oldest friends in the kitchen in my apartment that weirdly was like all black and white.
Yeah.
And I, for some reason, I can't remember how I realized it, and I was reading a book at the time about lucid dreaming, so it was like teaching me little steps to get there. I mean, that those books at work, some of them do. They're pretty useful. And all the characters in the dream, when I called them out on it, their heads dropped. Like robots switching off.
Wow.
It was very scary.
That's very
weird. I immediately
did
not enjoy it at all. So I didn't get the response that this other person did. But I'm sure it takes a lot of practice.
Yeah, I imagine it does.
But it was almost like the veil of that reality had now broken.
Yeah.
So they just went, they all kind of powered down.
That's very strange.
And I'm just stood looking at these people with their heads down. I don't know what that meant, but... Yeah, imagine how useful that would be to get feedback. They're like, oh, I represent this, or some bully, or your bad temper, or this specific archetype. And then you can wake up and just adjust.
Maybe that's how Harry Potter was written.
No, yeah, probably. She's a genius. She may have done that.
Yeah. I can't remember why we're supposed to hate her nowadays. Some political correct. reason, but books are great.
Yeah, those ones were fantastic for sure. I wish his brother was still alive, or I think him on Rogan would be one of the best.
That would have been the best episode of Rogan ever. By far ever. Yeah,
I think other than maybe one. Hunter S. Thompson in his prime, talking to Rogan.
Who is that?
Hunter S. Thompson is, it's on the picture behind you, he has the gun. And he's kind of pointing.
Too young for this?
So he wrote for Rolling Stone magazine.
Oh, okay.
And he inspired the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And was just this kind of lunatic of a sports writer, but also a bit of a political one. Like, he hated Nixon and talked a lot of shit. And he was just did tons of drugs, but his writing is just incredible.
Oh, really? That sounds cool.
And Rogan's a huge fan of him. Anyway, I digress, but this guy did probably more drugs than any human being that may have ever lived.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah. So either him or Dennis. But it's nice that there's so many lectures from Dennis. Are you sorry, Terrence. Are you familiar with many of them?
Oh, they're amazing. I love them so much. There's endless ones.
They're just so hard to understand.
Alan Watts is another one for me. I don't know if you've listened to much Alan Watts, but I love him. And I really follow a lot of his like philosophies on stuff. Like, I'm a big fan of Taoism. And
did Alan Watts do psychedelics?
Oh, yeah.
He did. Okay, yeah. Big time.
He had a lot of lectures on drugs and psychedelics. And he was a big psychology guy. And but he was mostly his form of expertise was in like Western religions and stuff like Buddhism, Taoism, which isn't really a religion. It's kind of more just like a philosophy. But
mostly the stuff I've heard from him is talking about the importance of things in life and what you, when you get to the end, what you won't find important. So don't focus on this throughout, like those types of messages. And they're really useful.
He's one of the guys who's like, who encourages people, which I agree with fully, is like, don't focus on like making money in life, focus on enjoying life and focus on doing what makes you happy the most in life. And like, obviously you have to feed yourself, but don't chase a job just to make money, you know, make sure that you enjoy it.
It takes a brave person to do that though.
Yeah.
It's hard to turn away from, it brings such stability and comfort in its own right, especially one that pays quite well, even if you hate it.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to move away. And the worst part about it all is you get trapped before you even realize.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you're making some money, you buy all the things that go with it. Well, now you got to pay for them.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just give them up.
But I feel like that's society, right? Like, isn't that the, like, whole marketing system that we've created for ourselves and all these advertisements and all these people telling you, oh, you know, when you get, it's so funny. I have an old car. My car is like a 1996 Mercedes that I bought for like $1,000. And I always joke.
Classic.
I always joke. It's not that classic, but I always joke. I got it stuck earlier, but I always joke that back in 1996, if you had this car brand new, you were like hot shit. You were like a lawyer or a dentist or
no
something.
No doubt. Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's like we're taught like, yeah, once you make it, you know, you got to get the nice car or the nice watch or whatever it is.
Well, it's hard to start making some money and not want to spend it.
Yeah.
Because when you're poor or you think about it, or a lot of the times you think about what you can't have, what you would like.
But I think it's about being happy with what you do have. And like my favorite philosophy is like less is more. And so just like being content with the way things are and obviously working to improve them, but, you know, never asking for more than you need, pretty much.
That's a message I would imagine often comes from shroom trips.
Definitely, definitely.
It seems to be there's like two major components that I see. It's like, you know, especially when you're on shrooms, you like you could look around at having two Ferraris and your really cool phone and your big TV. You don't even want to go near them.
Yeah,
you're just like, what is this? Why do I have this? That seems like a lot of
work. The concept of time and money mean nothing on psychedelics. Like, they're just dumb. Mm-hmm. They're just weird things that we structure our society around.
Yeah, the breakdown of time is a pretty unnerving. That might be the most unnerving part of shrooms.
Yeah.
Is you're like, wait, we 100% made that up, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it feels like...
Where do I go from here?
It feels like you enter like a video game in some ways.
Yeah. It's definitely a different place.
Yeah.
And I wonder, too, when they talk about kind of that and that input, like you get, it's like, you know, are these things happening around us all the time? Maybe we do pick up on it, but subconsciously. So it's not really there. Like that moment when you're like, I kind of had a bad feeling about that meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know why. It's like everything was said right.
Yeah.
People seem nice. I just have this, you know, when they say go with your gut.
Yeah.
And it really is like a difference between making a logical decision and a feeling one. And it's like, well, how did you pick up on that? And it often works to go with your gut. It takes some bravery.
does, yeah.
It takes some bravery to do that.
You have to trust the universe a little bit, too.
Right.
You know, you can't completely trust it, but, you know, the alternative is where you have no trust, and then you have everyone just watching over each other all the time.
Yeah. And it, and maybe that's just kind of a doorway that it opens a little bit of.
Yeah.
So it's like, there you go. These things are out there all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think the big part of that comes back to the violent crime thing that you brought up. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a good reason that people have had these psychedelic experiences don't want to commit those sorts of crimes.
Yeah.
It's like you realize, oh, I am hurting myself when I hurt somebody else.
Yeah.
They're just in pain.
It's the humility aspect of it. It's like I understand and recognize that you are also a living being who feels pain, and that would not be fun for you, and I wouldn't want someone to do that to me, you know?
For sure. And it's all highlighted on psilocybin.
Oh, yeah.
Like more so than anything.
Yeah.
And maybe even MDMA kind of gets you there, but it's not as a reflective drug. You just feel really good.
Really good, yeah.
Super happy. You've got a lot of love in your heart. So it's almost like a free experience. If you're a person in a lot of pain and you're struggling, kind of a ton of PTSD, whatever, and it's just kind of plagues you, then you do that. And this is why they use MDMA therapy now for, yeah. You know, I think they do it for like couples counseling and also people with military PTSD so they can like rewrite their own memory experience because they think about it while experiencing this joy, and it kind of helps them see what they could have learned from it instead of it just all being bad.
Mm-hmm.
And those experiences a lot of times are really bad, but it gives you like a free moment of like, oh, this is how good I could feel.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I've never done MDMA, but I think what a lot of people I've heard say about it is that it enables you to recall these like terrible experiences that you've had without actually feeling the emotions that you feel about them. Like you're because of the drug, you're completely
happy.
You're happy about everything. So it's like when you then go back and think about these things that you previously had negative emotions attached to, you don't have those same negative emotions attached to them. And so you can think about them in a completely new way.
Well, you're more forgiving.
Yeah.
Because you're so kind of full of love, that feeling of love that you're like, oh, they did that because they just didn't know.
Yeah.
Or they were lost. Or they were, it like puts you in a very unusual place.
Yeah. It allows you to let go of a lot of bad things, though, from what it sounds like.
You should probably try it.
That one has been interesting. I don't know. I usually like to stick to the natural ones. I've only ever done shrooms. I don't know.
Well, I'm a bad influence then. I apologize.
Yeah, I know. I've heard a lot of really great experiences with MDMA and stuff. And like anything, I would make sure that I want to get like the actual stuff. And I don't know. I think that will be one down the road, though. I don't have a desire in my heart to do it right now. You know, I don't feel the need to.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should edit that bit out because your professor might listen to it and be like, "What? Why are you getting credit for this? This guy's trying to encourage you to do MDMA. This is a school project."
Yeah, they don't need to know.
No, they don't need to know.
Attached to anything.
It's fine. It's 2022, bro. People are more open these days.
Yeah,
these are
I
just
think
discussions.
So. Yeah.
The last bit I wanted to hit on that I felt was super important and is a thing that in modern medicine is just not discussed is Dennis was saying, look, medicine is kind of set up now to where we just try and keep you alive forever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. 100% of the time, you're going to die. Right?
Yep.
Now, they can't say that when you go to a hospital. They can't be like, hey, you're doing great now, but eventually you're going to die. Like, if that was always the reminder. And a lot of our society these days, you know, in the modern era, we've lost that connection with death. I think older cultures had like a way better understanding of it. It's like, hey, you live, you don't last forever. We prepare for death. These are the ceremonies. Everyone in the tribal community was very aware of it. And now we keep it away. We all kind of, at least in myself, I know it happens, but there's a part of my mind that's like, you never die. You just keep living and being
young. That's weird. Yeah, I don't know.
It's strange, right?
It is strange, yeah. I feel like there is something very beneficial to having a, you don't really see this in much Western cultures, but Eastern cultures, you see a lot of like, death is just treated differently. Like their ceremonies when someone dies are just completely different than ours. The way that they discuss it and think about death is just handled differently.
Well, other cultures celebrate
that.
And ours are so depressing. We all wear black.
Yeah.
Everyone's quiet. You have to go to a church, which for most people
is already
religious. Yeah, you're just like, it's awkward. And then you just stand around and people are crying and they wear black veils and the box goes into the ground and it's like, all right, I guess we just
move on.
All get drunk now and go home.
Yeah, it's not really that great. I think also the way most Americans or I guess Western people think about death, I think is wrong as well. Like, it's like, I don't know, you think about it, but I think most people don't actually. I think a really healthy exercise is to like imagine what would happen if you died. And like, I don't know, you have to be careful with this, but like, just imagine, like, I think it's just a healthy thing to think about, because in doing so, you get to appreciate everything that you do have in life and that you're not dead afterwards, you know. And maybe that's a psychedelic thing that is also, I think, really beneficial. Because, I mean, before any of those experiences, I looked at death completely different than I do now. So I think that that's another useful one. And I think historically, maybe the reason why a lot of these Eastern cultures have such healthy views on death is because of these substances, possibly.
Well, it's just the preparation issue. You know, I think often very old people whose bodies are failing, I think that it feels to them like they got there very quickly.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, I'm here now? I don't think I'm ready for this.
Yeah.
I haven't had no preparation for, like, moving on, and it's probably very scary for some people,
that's
especially
what I'm saying,
if they're
is
alone.
Like, they don't think about it at all through their life. Mm. They think about, oh, I don't have time to think about dying. I'm too busy living. It's like,
I got to get this. I got to get that.
Yeah,
still
I have
got
so many
to
things
do.
To do. I have my kids. I have a career. I have to retire. You know, all these things that we have to do as humans – or we have to do as humans, we never stop and look around at, like, everything that we have and the fact that it could all be completely gone very quickly.
Yeah, and they're showing that people that have experienced, you know, at least psilocybin on different levels, you know, I don't think they're talking microdose, like decent amounts.
Yeah.
They have kind of a more positive outlook moving towards death. And then even Dennis finished it with the, you know, there were some very sick people and he's saying it doesn't cure cancer, like as far as we can tell, but it can lift your spirit so much. It can make you feel like you accept that you have it and you're not depressed constantly and fighting it all the time. The stress level's reduced. Your body can then respond better and also prepare your mind for moving on.
Yeah.
It's like there should be, I would like to think that there could be the option for like, okay, we've done all we can medically. So now do you want to move into the preparing for death protocol that we have set up and select from whatever?
Yeah.
You know, either do like
on your
course
iPad
of MDMA or like a psilocybin
on your iPad
journey.
You can swipe through the things like it's a drive-through menu, you know, like
yeah. And then they have therapists that kind of integrate it with you and chat with you that are like, you know, death preparedness therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be wonderful.
I think so too. I think that could be really helpful for a lot of things. I do want to touch on, before we end this podcast, on Dennis's academy that he's building.
That
sounds amazing. And I listened to one of his podcasts that he did on the Rogan show a while ago. And it was before he got anything off the ground, but he was just kind of talking about it and everything. So it's really, really great to hear him talk about it coming along and everything. And I think that that's a really great academy and really great idea and just an overall really good thing for the world.
Oh, sure.
I think, yeah.
I mean, it's what you need to put together, and then you create results, and then people can observe those results instead of just a lot of anecdotal stories.
It seems like the scientific and proper way to handle it. Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you need? $2 million?
I don't know how much money.
It seemed like a lot.
Yeah. Although I don't know. I feel like
a lot.
It probably was more than two. But yeah. But I think that that would be a really good thing if that could get off the ground someday.
Yeah.
Donate.
Well, I think it was Duncan Trussell and Rogan talking recently about how they think that it was Graham Hancock talking to Rogan. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, both of them agreed, that no one should run for public office unless they've done at least 10 pretty heavy mushroom trips. And it's one of those things where, you know, you say it to somebody that really doesn't understand this, they just roll their eyes like, that is ridiculous, dude. No one's going to do it. But it would be so beneficial.
It would.
Anyone that's had the experience would say, oh, no, this is a bad idea. Like, those that haven't had the experience, I think that everyone would just then be a hippie.
Yeah.
They'd be showing up in headbands and it'd be Cheech and Chong in Congress and 0% chance that it would be that.
No.
And it would be compassion.
Yeah.
In a whole different way. And that's really, the shamans were like the leaders of most ancient cultures and mm-hmm. priests and whatever. And the Greeks were doing work with psychedelics.
Yeah.
The Egyptians were, you know, people in the Amazon. I mean, Vikings were doing mushrooms. Yeah, like the leaders were doing this.
If all of the historical accounts of what we think, how far it goes back, are true, then it's quite arrogant of us to think that we don't need these substances. You know what I mean? In some capacity in society.
But we are arrogant now. We think
exactly.
We invented all the cool shit. They were basically primitive, even if they did build some pyramids. You know, they were cutting out people's hearts and chopping off heads. And we're like, we're just better.
Yeah.
So we don't need this. Yeah. We go Walmart. We got everything we need.
Yeah.
And on that note, thank you, Sean. Great conversation. Guys, check out this episode, 299, Jordan Peterson, Dennis McKenna, and let us know what you think. We really enjoyed it. It's a great podcast to check out. Anytime Dennis is on a podcast, it's worth following that little, you know, route of, it doesn't matter who he talks with, I like to find it and go get there. And, you know, Jordan often brings a lot of great things to the table.
Truly great minds.
Love it. Thank you, buddy. And thank you, guys. Tune in next week. We appreciate you.